Jackson's Spiky Drill Ball Podcast, presented by McDonald's of Jackson, Wellston, Oak Hill, and now proudly in MacArthur. McDonald's and Viking basketball. I'm loving it. The Viking Round Ball Podcast with head coach Matt Coles is your weekly look inside Vinton County Vikings basketball. Stand by for recaps and previews of all of this week's Viking action, plus scores, stats, guest interviews, and more. Now broadcasting across the World Wide Web.
From a padded room in his basement.
Alongside the head coach of the Vikings, Matt Coles, here's your host, Carl Knox.
And welcome once again to another exciting edition of the Viking Round Ball Podcast, along with the big dog, the head boys varsity coach of the Vinton County Vikings, Matt Coles, Carl Knox. So glad you joined us. Whatever you're doing, wherever in the world you are, certainly appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to get caught up, entertained, and further your knowledge of Viking basketball. The podcast presented by McDonald's, McDonald's and MacArthur, Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. Whether it's before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports, they go hand in hand. McDonald's, I'm loving it. How you doing there, Bob?
Doing well. I don't think anyone's ever accused us of imparting knowledge on anybody, but we'll see what we can do.
We'll take cheap shots and, you know, that sort of thing. We'll do whatever we got to do.
Yeah, that's what we do.
It's just the nature of the business. So I take it Christmas in the rearview mirror. You made it through the holidays.
Made it through. A lot of batteries, a lot of putting together toys, but yeah, made it through.
Well, good. Just briefly, what the highlights of the whole holiday time at the Combs household?
It was fun just being around the kids and family. But when you have a 2-year-old, it's kind of interesting. He was opening his gifts and everybody's gifts.
If there was a present,
he was ripping it open. Yeah,
he doesn't understand that there's.
He either doesn't understand or just doesn't care. Well, one way or the other, he's going to open some gifts.
Well, and the little man there's kind of hard-headed, despite his small
size. I don't know whose kid he is, but he has a little bit of a temper and hard-headed.
Okay, and I know with your vast mechanical skills, you absolutely love and embrace the challenges of unpacking children's toys and putting them together, and I know that you've been known to have a meltdown or two when... things that the directions.
Well, I tell you what, anybody has kids out there will vouch for this. You get a kid's toy, and I mean, that stuff's in that package. That's higher security. It's got to be than some things at like Fort Knox. I mean, you've got to have tools to get to even get it out of the package. I mean, it's zip tied in there. And, yeah. I mean, it's, I'll tell you.
Just off the beaten path, but on that same thought, girl that used to work in our agency, now down in Cincinnati, working in an insurance agency down there, saw on Facebook, she was trying to open one of these children's toys in the plastic thing. She ran a knife through her hand onto the ER Christmas morning.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you need right there.
Talk about childproof. They make the parent work. You got to work hard. But yeah. Enough of the Christmas stuff. Glad everything went well for you. Getting on to basketball this past Friday night. We are taping this Monday afternoon, December the 30th, if you care. Coach Combs is having his health drink. Well, what is that?
This is called Sparks, Advocare Sparks.
You're on this diet thing and you're eating healthy and taking all these vitamins. I hope it tastes better than it looks.
It tastes great.
Really?
Yeah, it's
wonderful.
Like Gatorade.
Okay. You're just rattling around, making noises.
Don't mind me.
It's okay. you guys improve your record this past Friday night at home against the Jackson Ironmen. That game was played on December the 27th. As you guys even up your season record to 3-3, 3-3 overall, 1-1 in the TBC Ohio, and the final score against the Jackson Ironmen, 76-46, a 30-point win for the Vikings. Although I think that the big telling tale was the third period, as you guys come out and go on a 28, outscore them 28-6 in the third period. But that first half, Jackson Ironman, despite the fact that they are winless on the year, they gave you guys all you wanted there in the first half.
Yeah, you got to give them credit. I mean, I talked to a few people. I was like, didn't play very well in the first half. I after watching the film, we didn't play outstanding, but we didn't play terrible. I mean, we scored 32 points. I thought offensively we did some good things. They had a kid, the
Leach.
I can't remember his first name. Maybe Austin Leach. Just played really, really well. I mean, scored 18 points in the first half. We did some things to try to get him slowed down, and you got to give him credit when he hits 25-foot pull up three with a hand in his face. You know, it's one of those things. But I thought that I think it's one situation where you have to give Jackson more credit than give us the blame in that first half. They played really well, and I thought they played with emotion and did what they had to do. We weathered that storm and had a small lead at halftime, and then, like you said, in the third quarter, I thought we just made an effort to pick up the pressure a little bit. We weren't sure if we'd cause a lot of turnovers, but we thought we might disrupt him, the Leach kid, a little bit, and maybe there are others, and at least get the game maybe to a different tempo and get us more involved in the open court. Fortunately, we did cause turnovers, and then it really snowballs when you do that.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, that, obviously it was a huge third quarter for us, and I thought our kids coming out of halftime responded well.
In general, what was the overall halftime chat? Because it didn't seem like you were, you weren't fighting mad or, you know, really upset when you went in the locker room. I'm just curious, what was the discussion?
It was pretty calm. It was more, I tell you, the thing we focused on the most was, I thought we were playing really hard, but at times when you're pressuring, especially if you're not careful, you'll play hard but not smart. You know, there's a technique to it. I mean, just can't, you say, okay, we're going to pressure a little bit. At times in the first half, we were just running around crazy. I know one time we had three guys trapping the ball. You know, you can't have those types of things. And we just talked about technique. And, you know, look, we're wanting to pressure. You got to play hard, but there has to be a technique to it. You know, these things we practice every day. We practice for a reason. So we really talked about our pressure and making sure we did it the right way. We recover to the backside, not to give up an easy shot. You don't want it to be all or nothing, either a steal or a layup for them. So that's what I thought. That's what we focused on the most. And I thought our kids did a nice job because we came out and played hard and pressured, but we did it the right way to where we protected the basket and we didn't give up easy shots. So that was really the talk at halftime.
For the Vikings, led by the big sophomore, Chase Wood, he has 22 points on the night. Max Ward has 17 points and 10 rebounds for the double-double. Alex Owens has 9. Andy Long has 4, Albright with 9, Austin Lambert comes in with 6 points, and Tristan Bartow with 7 points, and he continues. Man, the kid is a great free throw shooter.
Yeah, he's just a good shooter. I mean, good shooting at 3, good free throw shooter. And he had a really nice game, and the thing of it is, sometimes in a game like that, you know, certain guys, their minutes are a little bit less than what they're used to just because of the way the game shakes out. We started the third quarter so well that I wasn't going to sub when we were on that kind of run, and we had that kind of momentum. And then when we got that big lead, our JV kids played the last 4 or 5 minutes. So, you know, sometimes, you know, it's one of those nights where a kid like Tristan maybe played a few less minutes, but certainly not because he played poorly. I thought he did a solid job when he was in there. I thought Ryan Slopko just really played well, though, in that third quarter. Defensively, he really got after it and made some nice passes and really helped us.
And you know the story with Slopko, and I think we've mentioned this in prior podcasts, is here's a young man that has not been on the floor since his eighth grade year.
Right.
And to kind of pick up things, and there's a huge difference between eighth grade ball and varsity ball. And as the season's going on, you kind of getting the impression from him that he's really starting to kind of get back in the groove and a little bit more comfortable. I know one of the first couple scrimmages I watched, he was, and not to take a shot at Ryan, but he was kind of lost.
Yeah, I mean, and these guys, I mean, he's played 6 games now in his entire high school career as a senior.
Right.
So it's a little bit of an odd situation. And same way with Tristan being a freshman, he's got 6 games under his belt now. And those are the two guys that run our points. So we're starting to gain experience now. Every time, we talked about this earlier on the shows, back, like you say, back in the preseason and early season. Every time these guys play, I mean, that's another notch in their belt, you know, in terms of experience. And I think think you're starting to see a big improvement with those guys that are finally getting some games under their belt, and hopefully that'll continue, because we're going to get into a stretch of schedule here where we play a lot of games.
Yes, you got a boatload of them coming up. We'll be talking about them later in the podcast, as you have games coming up this Friday night, January the 3rd. On Friday, you take a road trip down to Meigs, and then follow that up with another game Saturday night, January the 4th. That's the annual game against Piketon, and that you always play over at the OU Shoemaker Center. So you're going to be tested by two teams. Maybe their record's not indicative, but Meigs is doing well this year. They're undefeated in the TVC Ohio, and we'll be touching on that. But we do have, boy, we talk about a guest this week. We might make this segment short, because the guest we have coming in next, as we've done the Where Are They Now, we're going to be doing one of those next week, and then we've talked to the coaches last week, and by the way, did you get a chance to listen to the podcast?
I have it. I
you're afraid.
Well,
you should be.
That may be. Sometimes if it's better just to not know what people say about you. But no, I just haven't had a chance yet to listen. I was thinking about that today. I haven't had a chance to listen to it. I'm going to have to download it and hear the glowing things, I'm sure.
Last week,
For
those who didn't catch the podcast last week, it was never a dull moment with our two guests, the JV coach Travis Hale, as well as freshman coach Chad Carpenter. And they're always very gracious and never wordless or thoughtless in terms of having an opinion about you and being very willing to elaborate
on. Well, that's the one thing about our coaching staff. We, under no circumstances, do we ever cut on each other. We're just 100% support.
Especially Coach Kite. He's never has a bad.
If anybody knows us, they know how sarcastic I'm being right now. We have more than our fair share of fun with each other.
Before we get into to our guest, I mean, seriously, you worked on Coach Lovely's staff over at Uniota, first getting in the business, and then how many years were you at Alex?
Just one.
Who was the head coach back
Frank
then?
Frank Doudna.
Okay.
Dr. Doudna. He's the principal over there.
Right. You coached with him. No. And then when you went to Portsmouth, side of East, you were down there for what, 1 or 2 years?
1 year.
Who was your staff, or do you?
Yeah. I when I got down there, it was Jeff Miller, actually. People
remember
Jeff. He went with me down there. And then I had a younger kid at the time, a kid just out of high school, was coaching my JV. We didn't have freshmen. We were, a Division IV school.
And, right.
And he stayed there and coached for a long time, coaches baseball there now, a guy by the name of Todd Gillen. And I've been on some different staffs. And the nice thing, all the staffs I've been on, we've had our fair share of fun, we certainly, with our staff here, you have to have fun. It's a long season. I mean, you can't, there's going to be ups and downs in terms of winning and losing. And it's just a long, long season from basically the middle of October when you start conditioning until the middle of March or whatever, when it's over, or at least you hope the middle of March. You have to have fun along the way, and we do for sure.
And I think the other thing about your staff, not only this one, but, going back to when Coach Miller was your first assistant, the guys, not only can you guys have fun, but also the nice thing is that when things get heated, when you're giving each other your opinions, it's kind of when you have the type, I guess what I'm saying, when you have other coaches that don't take things so personally,
right,
and don't get tore up because you throw a fit and you might not agree with them. Do you think that's a point with this staff that, everyone understands that you're all going to have your moments, you're all going to have your meltdowns, and just let it go?
Well, I think if you're friends, first and foremost, it helps, because then this person cares about me and they consider me a friend. It's just a heated moment where we're trying to discuss something, and that's the great thing. I mean, with Carp and Travis and NJ and then our two guys, Chris and Jared too, who played for us and have now become friends of ours as they've gotten older. And when you're friends first, that helps the situation for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what. Speaking of friends, we started to get into our guest this week, and unfortunately, I guess you and I have to actually admit that, yes, he is one of our friends.
Is he an FOP, like Friends of the Podcast?
I don't think that this guest even knows how to turn on a computer, let alone get the podcast, but I will find out here shortly. Very, very excited and happy to welcome in our guest coming up next. 36 years in the business, 651 career wins, a state championship, scads of regional appearances, and a personality unlike no other. The one and only Coach Norm Pearson of the Oak Hill Oaks, and a legend in basketball, not just in Ohio, but nationally. We'll be talking to him next on the Viking Realm Ball Podcast. Back on the Viking Realm Ball Podcast, presented by McDonald's. McDonald's of MacArthur, Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. Whether it's before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports, they go hand in hand. I'll tell you what, we've had a lot of guys on, a lot of old coaches, a lot of famous people, but Coach Combs, I'm telling you right now, I think this might take the cake. We have broken the boundaries and pulled out all the stops this time.
I like how you said we've had a lot of famous people. Who the heck?
Famous is a relative word.
Yeah, that's what you'll say.
Yeah. But no, this week, episode 30, we're very excited to welcome in the always cordial and exciting Coach Norman J. Pearson, head boys basketball coach at Oak Hill High School. Hello, Coach. How are you?
Doing great, guys. You?
I'm good. Yeah, let me
pull your mic. Enjoy the holidays, get a little bit of a break here, and of course, you know, never ends for us basketball guys. We got to practice through it and practice every day and try to keep the kids focused. But no, I'm doing real well.
Well, I'm glad you made the trip up here. You know, obviously, you're busy. Not only are you the head basketball coach, but also the AD down at Oak Hill High School. And, you know, I started as, you know, you and I text back and forth, and occasionally I've been known to help you out the holidays with an occasional turkey or ham or something like that. And I'm
half a ham.
Oh, gosh. Can you get up on that mic a little bit closer? There you go. Because I know your voice normally carries, but the microphone's just a little bit.
Hey, it'll work. Guaranteed. We'll make it.
But seriously, I mean, I know we had Coach Osborne on a couple weeks ago, and then I started looking at your bio as far as 36 years in the business. Your first year of 1977?
Yes.
Started out 6 years at Oak Hill, then you went, 2 years at Wilmington, 21 years at Chesapeake, and now you're back for, is this 7 or 8 years at Oak Hill?
I'm thinking this is number 8.
Wow. And you're now 651 career wins. Where does that rank all time, or do you even, I doubt
it. I think it's number 5.
You're 5 all time?
Yeah, all time, yes.
Wow. What, I ask Oz kind of the same question, and in all seriousness, all jokes aside, how do you stay motivated and stay in a business that's highly competitive, highly stressful, and still enjoy it for that long a period of time? Why? How do you do it?
Well, I think for myself, probably just don't have a whole lot of other things that interest me. You know, it's just, you know, I'm not one of those guys. With my wife being retired as a school teacher, and she's got a full-time job now babysitting the grandkids, and so that doesn't give her much free time, because the more she does it, the more they rely on her to do it. And you know, that's how it is. And so it's hard for me to get away and do the traveling that I'd probably want to do, like Coach Osborne is doing right now himself. And I've just been able to take it 1 year at a time here recently, and just kind of call my own shot as far as if I want to come back and continue coaching. But, you know, I still enjoy it. And the big thing is, as long as the kids are interested and they're working hard, it makes it easier for you, you know, to continue in the business.
Obviously, some of the main, I guess, feather in your cap throughout your coaching career, as many people in southeastern Ohio or all over know, you won the 2009 Division IV state championship with the Oaks. You've also coached, what was it, 2010, the McDonald's All-American All-Star Game. 2007, you were the Jordan Brand's coach in the All-Star Game, and that was at Madison Square Garden, correct?
Yes.
2002 Paul Walker Award winner. the list goes on and all. 2012, the most recent feather in this inaugural first annual National Rising Senior event, which encompassed, how many, was there six states involved in that?
Yeah, six states this
year. And it's getting bigger and bigger.
Every year, they'll continue to add teams to it every year.
But talk quickly about that, I mean, because that's the most recent thing that just happened this past summer, and a lot of people might not know about it. How did that thing get thrown together? How did you, who was on your staff, the level of competition, just what was it all about?
Well, and Matt will, you know, he can verify a little bit this now since, you know, he's district director in District 13. But the State Association, Basketball Coaches Association, you know, they were presented with this opportunity. They've been trying to get this thing off the ground. And when you go to your national meetings in Indianapolis when all the states arrive, right, and you have your representative, which our representative is Dave Fralick, who's a retired coach of Van Wert right now. He kind of got it off the ground with us and just kind of did a little things here, you know, left and right, and wanting to know if, you know, Ohio wants to be interested in that. So they basically presented it to me, and I think the reason why it was presented to me more so than anything else is because of my interest in the events that I've taken care of with the Ohio-Kentucky All-Star Games. So they wanted my opinion on what we had to do and if we wanted actually to take part in this. And I says, well, I'll get it off the ground the first year for you and just, you know, put it in my lap and let me choose the players, and we'll have some tryouts. And then when I once I did that, they also wanted me to be the head coach. So that's where it started. It was a stressful event, basically for the fact you just don't know which kids would show up, and because it's in a summertime there. Carl and Matt knows this as well as I do, that you've got all the major tournaments going on at that point in time, and the big one was the Peach Jam in Georgia, which meant we couldn't get the players that we actually wanted. But the kids that we basically did take on this trip and did play with us were phenomenal. It was almost like coaching my own team. They listened. They were disciplined. They ran an offense. They ran a defense. Not a lot of the stuff that you see in AAU ball.
Okay, and what time? This was during the summer. Was it May or June?
Yeah, it was in July.
So that's
right in the middle of
the
July.
AAU season. I mean, that's right in the middle of when all the AAU tournaments are going on.
Yeah, and that's why it's tough to get these kids to commit, because they're already playing on an AAU team. And that was my big concern. I told, you know, our directors that, and I said, we'll see. And, you know, we had some kids that we wanted on a team, and they even showed up for practice. And then, you know, the main one, which is Jayshon Tate, who's Ohio State's number one recruit for next year out of Pickerington Central. And, you know, great player, and he wanted to play, but he couldn't because, you know, he was committed to the Peach Jam. So, but the players that we wound up getting, they played well, and we were very fortunate to go undefeated.
And you set up your own staff. I know Coach Tom Barrick, the former coach down at Wheelersburg, friend of yours, he helped you out. He was one of your assistants. Who else was on your staff?
Well, Tom basically, once we got things put into gear, since Tom was the acting president of basketball Coaches Association, he just kind of did a little legwork, helping me get the uniforms and everything ordered, and Tom did a really nice job with that. And then I picked two guys that I was very familiar with. Pete Liptrap, good friend of mine from Pickerington North. Why I picked him, I just felt sorry for him at the same point in time. He's a good guy. He's an old-time coach. He's a no-nonsense guy. And then I picked Jeff Quackenbush from Newark, who's one of the better young coaches in the state of Ohio. And his post player played for us this year, so it was important that I got, you know, him involved into it. So those guys did an excellent job. And, you know, we just had a great time for the 3 days that we basically dealt with that tournament.
Okay, you got any questions?
Oh, not about that specifically. I was going to ask him, not to change gears
too quick,
but we had Oz in here, and I know you have a history with Coach Osborne. It's got to be pretty special to you that he's getting ready to go into the Hall of Fame. I mean, obviously you're future Hall of Famer yourself, but I know that when we got the word, you broke the news to him, and that had to be pretty meaningful to you.
Well, it was, because, you know, basically I've done everything since, you know, all the years that I was District 13 director, which
was a lot.
Myself was about 25 years myself, and then I said it was time for a younger coach to step in, and you know, you showed interest in that. But I pushed for everything that Oz received, the Paul Walker Award, which he was definitely deserving, the Sports Ethic Award, which he was definitely deserving, and you know, there was no question he was going to be a Hall of Fame coach. And you know, and you look back the last couple years, I've had two very good friends that went in the Hall of Fame, Rick Van Meter from Greenfield, who, you know, I played baseball baseball with in college with Rick, and we've become very good friends. And then really he took over for me when I left Gallup Police as an assistant under Oz to go to Oak Hill. And then Carl Wolf just this past year was inducted. And two of those guys are two of the better coaches in this area and two great friends of mine.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of the cradle of coaches down there, man, not under Oz.
Just and on that topic with you going in, and Oz was, we were commenting, kind of joking around about how someone as mild-mannered and classy as Oz could have, you know, some crazy assistants like you and Rick, and just, you know, the difference. But seriously, looking back in the 70s when you started, just got your start before you had your own varsity team there at Oak Hill, when you were coaching under Oz, obviously you're different, but what do you specifically remember maybe taking away from him being a young, right out of college kid, getting into the coaching business, and something you saw in him and his style or the way he went about doing his work that really kind of hit home with you and said, yeah, that's the way you need to go about it?
Well, you know, at that time, he's the one that really got me started. I mean, in the high school level, you know, prior to that, I'd had some coaching experience at the University of Rio Grande under Art Lanham because I finished out my career there as an assistant to him and then as well as a baseball coach there. But the big thing with Oz, I think, was his total organization. Those habits always stuck with me. He not only told me to be organized on a daily basis, but you have to be organized on a weekly basis. And then you take the weekly basis to a monthly basis, and you just kind of foresee everything down the road that you need to do as a coach. And, you know, people in this profession anymore, it's really remarkable what people perceive. You know, they just think that certain guys go out and they coach the game. They don't understand the preparation that you have to do. And I was just talking to some of the guys the other day. I'm saying, you know, you're looking at a group of coaches right now that are taking over in our area and through the state of Ohio, and I don't know how long they're going to last because I don't know how much time they put into what they're actually supposed to be doing. I don't see coaches scouting as much as they used to. I think basically it's just, you know, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, and that's a lack of preparation. And I think that's one of the major things that Oz always taught me. You've got to be prepared, and it didn't matter how many times or who you were playing, you had those teams scouted and you were prepared for them.
It reminded me when you got to talking about that. We didn't say this yet, but he gave a talk. You got a chance to speak at the state coaches clinic this year,
yes.
And that was really cool for me because I know we always joke around with each other and stuff, but right. But like a lot of times as a high school coach, and I know a lot of high school coaches said this about after hearing you speak, we listen to college coaches talk, and you learn stuff, but they're dealing with a different type of situation than we're dealing with at the high school level. I mean, I once had a college coach, Gary Williams, once said this at a clinic. We don't teach our kids to box out. We just hit and go get. Well, your kids are 6'8" athletes. I mean, we've got to teach our kids to box out. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? If you got 5'11", you know, heavyset kid boxing out 6'5" kid. But so my point is listening to him talk was great because I knew everything you do. Theoretically, I could try to do. You know what I mean? Because we're dealing with the same types of kids. But you had one quote that day that I could not get out of my mind and haven't been able to get out of my mind. You said, "Today's game is overcoached and undertaught." Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I got that from one of the veterans and probably the most respected guy that I know in the game right now, Tate Slock, who also spoke there. I got Tates to come in from Florida and set him up with one of the guys to speak at the clinic, and you know, his was nothing about X's and O's. It was just all about motivation and why we're still in the game and what you have to do to stay in it. And he's you talk about a fundamental, old-fashioned guy. That's Tates, and he that was one of the quotes that he always reminded me when I worked out with Tates in the summer because we worked at the Nike Elite camps together, and he's usually in charge of the college players, and I'm with the high school players as we work it out. But it just I think what happens is the guys, coaches anymore, they watch games on TV, and they're going to run a play. They see a play that Ohio State runs, and okay, this is a nice play. Maybe that can fit our team. But it's not the play. It's how you teach to play. And the way you teach to play, you got, you know, your kids have got to be fundamentally sound when they do it. We just let things, we too many times in the game right now, things, you got cracks in the walls. And coaches do not take care of the cracks in the walls. And, you know, the crack's going to get bigger, and basically when that happens, the foundation's going to fall down. And they'll see something in practice, and, well, that's not important. We just got to make sure that the play works. No, the play's not going to work unless your kids have been taught how to run the play. And you don't run – it's just like today. We put in – you know, we're going to go through a little bit of a different type of set that we're running, and that's – we worked 15 minutes just on drills that we were going to use for the play. And I don't think if you you don't teach the drill, then the play is never going to work.
Right.
And it's too many people, I think, they just put into play and they say, let's run it, and the basics just aren't there for it. So it's all – some coaches, it's all about X's and O's, and they'll say it's not the X's and O's, but it's the Jimmys and the Joes. Well, we all know that. You're not – you know, it don't matter what you run. If you don't have players, it's not going to be successful.
Right.
But you got to get the ball in your players' hands, and they've got to be comfortable with what they're doing. And I just think too many coaches have gotten away. And the reason why, it's just phenomenal. And you would you people – I've just been so blessed that I could go to a camp – and I can work with LeBron James, and I can work with Kevin Durant, and I can work with Chris Paul, and I can work with Harrison Barnes, and the Jared Sellingers, and guys like that. And it would blow your mind about how unfundamental they are on certain things. When you get to help side defense, and Tates would just sit there and he would just be scratching his head. But, you know, when they get to the college level, it's all about outrunning and outjumping your mistakes.
Right.
And that's basically what it is. And we can't do that here, you know.
Right.
And, you know, the most fundamental coach probably ever was Bob Knight. And I can remember Bob Knight talking about rebounding. He said, I don't care how you get the rebound. You want to box off, you want to check and go, just get the rebound.
Get the ball
I don't care how you do it.
Right.
And, you know, when you got players like that, they can do it.
Right.
Well, you talk about these camps, and I mean, you know, you've the LeBron James Skills Academy, you've worked for how many, many years, haven't you? As long as...
Yeah, ever since it happened, you know, the LeBron Skills Academy took over for the Nike All-American camp. Well,
and then what's the camp that you do in Minnesota? What's that? Didn't you do a camp recently?
Well, no, the one I did in Minnesota basically was just a clinic.
Okay, it was good. And then obviously you did the Michael Jordan Flight School. Is that in Vegas or where's
No, the LeBron Skills Academy has now moved to Vegas. And then Jordan's Flight School Camp, Michael Jordan.
Was that's just, in Santa Barbara.
It's in Santa Barbara. That's in California.
That's where I always get the famous sombrero attacks.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get back to the coaching things. One of the things that... I remember it was the year that you were 2009, with the year you guys won the state championship. Coach Pearson thought that texting was the stupidest thing and was constantly just very upset with one of his assistants. Don't want to mention any names, but one of his assistants, he accused him of texting all the time. And about 6 months after that, I don't know if his wife got him a new phone or whatever, but he got the texting bug. And now, if you want to communicate with Coach P, you do not call him. You do not go see him in person. You text him. But of all the travel you do in the summer, you know, it's comical. And obviously, you're a guy that loves to travel. You like to get out, meet new people, go to different places. You know, a lot of people would say, gosh, this guy's been coaching 36 years since the beginning of time. He's very good at what he does. You're doing the things on a state level. Why in the world would someone your age want to pack their suitcase and you literally are gone a very large, a significant part of the summer? You're either in Vegas, California, or you're working a clinic or a camp. Obviously, you're dealing with top-notch talent, but what do you personally get out of that outside of enjoyment for your career?
Just friendship, probably more than anything in the coaching profession. It's, you know, why I become such great friends with Tate Slott. It started there at the Nike All-American Camp, and it's just I can remember the first year I worked there, Tate's just invited me. He said, listen, you're working with the high school kids, but I want you to work with the college kids too. So he, you know, that was during my lunch break and dinner break. So I didn't have lunch break, dinner break. You just worked it straight through. And I learned a lot from Tate's. And, you know, he gave me that opportunity. Same thing with Kevin Eastman, who's now with the Los Angeles Clippers. I've become excellent friends with him. Jay Billis, you know, of ESPN, the great George Raveling of Nike basketball. I got to know those guys and have had a lot of lasting relationships with them, and we talk about that right now. You know, every 2 weeks I'll send a text or an email to those guys, and we'll stay in correspondence. And you know, I think that's probably the thing that I've enjoyed most: getting to know guys, getting to be good friends with them, and it's really helped my career. I mean, it's just I become a better coach because of them, because I've said this all along. It doesn't matter how long you've been in the game, you can learn something every day. And I think that's the truth.
And I take it most of these things, obviously all these guys are very accomplished at their craft, be it as a player or now as a, in the coaching realms, but they're all probably pretty down-to-earth, really just outside of their profession, they're really great people. I take it that's...
Oh, it is. And, the one thing about it is that your best times when you work with those camps at that point in time is your breakfast, your lunch, and your dinner, when you sit down at the table and you just talk stories and you talk about how the day's going today in the camp. And, Jay Billis will come up with the stories about Coach Krzyzewski and everything else, and you'll really learn about stuff like that. And I think maybe one of the greatest compliments I ever got came from Jay Billis. He wrote in an article, and he said that he thought that regardless of the level of play or the level of coach, he said Coach Pearson could coach on any level. He really believed that. And I really, thought that was a tremendous compliment to me coming from someone like that.
And I know logistically with you and, you and Rita raising a family in Oak Hill, but was there ever a point in time in your career where you seriously considered maybe taking like a Rio Grande or a moving up to the collegiate level? Was that ever something that you explored or thought, I'd like to do that? Or has it just always been, no, I like doing high school level?
Yeah, I think it's just basically, you always thought about it. I think when I was younger, especially when I went to Wilmington, but then you kind of got into some of the messes. And, at that, Wilmington was the one time in my career that I had a Division I athlete, Greg Nard, who went to the University of Maryland and played. He was a point guard at Wilmington, and he was really an outstanding quarterback. He could have played at Ohio State. He was offered Ohio State, Penn State, Miami, or Florida, but Greg wanted to play basketball. And at that point in time, you're getting phone calls left and right at night, waking you up. You'd be 11:30 at night, and you'd get a phone call from these coaches. And I found out right then maybe that wasn't for me. You know how the game has adjusted today. It's basically, I just think that you hear things that weren't true,
right.
Stuff like that. And I just didn't think I could be I wanted to be a down-to-earth guy when it came to stuff like that. And, it was just, I don't know how you put that, but, the recruiting level basically is nothing but a form of prostitution to your certain thing. That's what it is. And, Matt will probably tell you the same thing even on the lower level. They're going to tell you what you want to hear, and they're going to tell you exactly what they can do for the kid, but then when it's all said and done, you didn't know. And that's why, still a certain point, I didn't want anything to do with it. So, and I'm fortunate I could stay in high school, and I'm happy there.
No, I was kind of going the same direction there with the question in terms of before we got onto that, where you were talking about the summer stuff you do. Whenever you do decide to get out of coaching high school, could you see yourself still doing all that summer stuff? Just sort of staying with the game that way?
Oh, I think so, yeah. And it keeps you involved. And the whole thing, as long as your health's good. That's the main thing right now. Right now I'm at the age of 63. And a lot of guys that are just a few years older than me have really struggled with hip replacements, right, knee replacements, things of this nature. And, eventually that's going to have to come my way, too. And it's really kind of set them back a little bit. And these are some of the guys that I work with at camp. So, right, as long as your health's good and your family and everything's fine, and as long as they want me to, my wife will want me to coach forever, just keeps me away from the house and gives her more money. So that's what I tell her all the time. So, it's just 1 year at a time, and then we go from there, guys.
Well, in all honesty, you have, your wife is a saint. To put up with the craziness that she, I've joked with you that when you were born, the good Lord blessed you with a incredible basketball coaching knowledge and blessed you with a wonderful, wonderful wife. And outside of that, I don't know what you would have. What would you have done if you never been a coach?
Yeah, we asked Oz this, remember?
Yeah, what would you have gotten into?
Realistically, I'd probably have stayed in my hometown, Warren, and I'd probably have been working in a steel mill. Because that's what I did in the summertime.
Right.
Once I got out of high school, when I was going to college, I'd come back in the summertime. I'd play double-A baseball. We had a great league there where we traveled all over the time, and I loved playing double-A baseball. And then, in the meantime, I worked in a steel mill for 3 months and made very good money at that point in time. But at the same point in time, also the steel mills – are not there anymore.
No,
they've shut down in Warren. They've shut down in Akron. They've shut down in Youngstown. So it's kind of like the stuff isn't there what it used to be. But I think that's probably what would have happened.
What I know, athletically, you, although you lettered and played basketball and baseball in high school, you, on the college level, you never played basketball. You were a baseball player, correct?
No, I played basketball for 2 years. Okay. My first year at Rio Grande, I played. We had a freshman team, and I was very fortunate to be the MVP. I come back the next year to be on the varsity from being a freshman, and that's when Rio Grande probably had as good a talent then as they've ever had at that point in time.
My question,
very loaded.
Why do you think, obviously you got into coaching, but why did you pursue the basketball coaching route versus the baseball, given that you were probably more successful as a baseball player than a basketball player? Why did you take the basketball?
I think because basketball was more intriguing. You know, baseball, you don't have much as much of a crowd, you know, and you know, especially in the smaller type of atmospheres that we have in southeastern Ohio. And, you know, I enjoyed playing both. I mean, I loved playing both. Probably, like I said, I could play doubleheaders in baseball every single day, you know, when I was younger, and it wouldn't bother me a bit. But, you know, basketball just came to me. I got an opportunity, and then I ran with it.
Biggest regret of your career?
Wow. I'm not sure.
I mean, this could be a coaching thing, a personnel thing, a life in terms of something. If you look back and say, because I mean, as successful as anyone who is successful will tell you, I screw up and I've made mistakes and things I wish I could change.
I guess if you go back and you had to play 50-50 or whatever, it may have been the point that I didn't take the Ironton job at one time.
What year was that?
I was right at the end of my career at Chesapeake. I'm not sure the exact year, but I mean, Ironton had been knocking on my door for numerous years, and they made me a tremendous offer to go there. And I really believe, and Ironton people believe that, that's when they went through this the situations with Dennis Gagai and Brigham Wagoner and those players that were so remarkable there. They promised me that if I had taken that job, that O.J. Mayo would have been there.
Really?
And if O.J. Mayo would have come, that would have brought Todd Mayo himself in. But, you know, it was just so hard for me to leave Chesapeake. I couldn't do it. I mean, because the people there were so great to me, and everything that they had did for me was just remarkable. So I don't think it was a regret. That might be the one thing that if you'd go back and you say, what would have happened if you'd have taken that job, you know, and could you have been more successful than you are? I doubt it. But then, you know, you and Ironton was a great basketball job at that point in time.
Coming back to Oak Hill, you just said it was very hard leaving Chesapeake. That community gave you 21 of some great years of your life, and they liked you so much they named the gym floor after you, and then you bolt town. Going back to Oak Hill. Just pointing out the truth.
Way to sugarcoat it, Carl.
Necessary. What kind of and knowing that you have all the respect in the world for the people of Chesapeake, and you know you still have friends and you know great lifelong memories and things like that. How did the dynamic of you, and obviously for most people realize that you, despite the fact you were a coach at Chesapeake for 21 years, you've always lived in Oak Hill and raised your kids there. But what was the dynamics, and how hard was it when you had to walk into the superintendent or principal's office and say, I'm done, and I'm going home? How did that whole thing work?
Well, I think it came about with, you know, the people from Oak Hill made a run at me. You know, guys that I had coached.
The first time around.
Jimmy Sloan when I was there the first time, and Doug Hale. Michael Hale, who I wasn't able to coach at that point in time. But they all, you know, came to me on the table and said, hey, we'd like for you to come home. We've got, you know, we want you to coach our sons. And Doug had JD. And Jimmy Sloan had Jesse. And then, naturally, Michael had Weston. So they wanted me to coach their sons. And it was a no-brainer for me. I wasn't interested. I mean, I said, no, I'm not interested. I'm not leaving Chesapeake. I think we're going to be good there for a long period of time. We got a great program. But then all of a sudden, it kind of hit me that, no, the drive was getting to me. I mean, this is the truth. There was two times that I fell asleep within the last 2 years and ran off the road coming back, you know. And that wasn't normal for me in early days, you know. But you just got more tired. You know, you're talking about driving at 6 o'clock in the morning, then you're coming back at 10 o'clock at night, 10 and 11 o'clock at night after games. And it just kind of wore on the body. And I said, you know, maybe this job at Oak Hill will refresh me, which it did. It gave me some more enthusiasm. It got me going, and it saved a lot of years on my life because of, you know, because there's no way I could have done that, continue to be coaching right now if I was at Chesapeake.
Do you think if you would have stayed at Chesapeake physically, you would have been done?
It would have been done, yes, absolutely. It just wore on my body. And there was one period of time then where I was having some health problems with my heart a little bit there, and some other things were going on. And I said, you know, I caught pneumonia one time, and I never missed school, and I was out of school for almost 2 weeks because of the pneumonia thing. So I figured it was just time to make a change.
Okay. You got any questions, Coach?
No, I'm just enjoying listening. I think I'm good. I'm just listening and learning. I've already asked you more questions than I asked Oz.
Just quickly, advice to a young coach. What are the biggest misconceptions people, young adults wanting to get in the business have about the business, and what's probably some of the things that most young people aren't taught or don't do? What would be your advice to some 21-year-old college grad wanting to be a high school basketball coach? What would you tell them?
Number one, it's not about you.
Good point.
It's not about you. It's about your kids. It's about your program, number one. You have to put your players in your program ahead of what you think it is. I just think there's too many coaches in the system now. It's all about them, the W's and the losses. And then the other thing is, do it the right way if you're going to do it. Don't do it 50%. Don't do it 75%. And you've got to make a commitment to the players you're with. And you've got to understand where they're coming from. You know, sometimes I think maybe the biggest mistake that I made in my coaching career was trying to be too perfect. You know, and players can't be perfect. And I think I have adjusted to that over the last few years, and I think I've done a better job with things of that nature. So, you know, you're going to do it the right way. Be on practice. Always be organized. Be there way ahead of your players and stay late. You should be the first one in the gym, the last one out, and don't let anything get in your way. I mean, yeah, there's too many times now I think coaches let things get in their way about coaching their team. I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, and excluding the dream kids, the kids that at a young age you know they're going to be good. Just the way the world works today versus the way it worked in 1977. You know, it used to be there was three sports predominantly. You played basketball, baseball, football. Now you have AAUs, you have summers. You know, it's hard to be a three-sport athlete today compared to, it seems like, to me at least. Do you agree with that point at all?
Well, I agree with you 100%. It's tougher for the kids because of what the commitment is. But, you know, realistically, in our area down here, yeah, we have AAU.
It's not as big.
But it's not as big. And here's my thing about kids playing AAU. I don't know if it makes them any better.
Because they're not getting...
Yeah, because our kids... Here's our thing here. How many Division I players have we had from Southeast Ohio? Oak Hill hasn't had any. Vinton County hasn't had any. The AAU it's for the Division I type of kids. Those are the kids that are going to get, you know, that they've got to funnel through the system, and they got to get all the notoriety and they want. For our kids, I don't think playing AAU makes them any better. I really don't, because they're not going to be playing, first of all, since they're down in this area, they're not going to be playing against the elite teams.
Right.
Like Ohio Red and things of that nature. So I think for our kids in our area to get better, they got to do it on an individual basis. And this is the thing that you hear from coaches, you know, before the game, they'll say, hey, Norm, how many of your kids actually work to get better on their own? There's not a whole lot of them. There's not a whole lot of them. I've been fortunate to have some kids that are basically basketball players, and they put in a lot of time. But then you have other kids that they'll come to the gym, and I'll guarantee you Matt will say the same thing. They'll be in the gym because you expect them to be there. And if you don't set it up for them, they won't be there. How many kids do you see anymore being on an outdoor court working to get better, ball handling and shooting? It's not happening anymore. It's not happening. And I think because of that, the kids, realistically, they're better athletes, but they're not better basketball players than what we've had in the past.
Do you think sometimes within the AAU or the OIB, all these summer leagues, a lot of the times that just they might even be developing bad habits, for lack of a better word, because they're not getting instructed by people that are really qualified? And I'm not saying this about all AAU coaches. I'm sure there's some great ones out there, but I've also seen parents or coaches that they have an obsession and a passion to coach, but maybe they're not trained to the point that they know what they're coaching. But their idea is, as long as our kids are playing 10 months out of the year, you know, whatever, that they're going to develop into a great player. And I think you would agree that's not the way.
And that's it. And that's exactly what you're saying is the truth. And parents get blindsided on this themselves. And, you know, shit, playing the AAU circuit is one thing, but getting better is a totally different aspect. And you got to get better on your own, you know. And you know, the football coaches want you to be in the weight room, which is fine. We want our basketball kids to be in a weight room, and then they've got their, you know, thing. They're 7-on-7 during the season, and then you've got your baseball coaches wanting you playing in the summer. So it's tough on the kids, you know, to try to do all the things. But, you know, if they're going to be good, they've got to be committed to the game. And I was talking to the coach from Rock Hill, Dave Hopper, and two of his assistants played for me at Chesapeake, Bobby Evans and Sammy Gu, and they said, do you have any kids that make themselves better? And I said, well, I'll just give you one story. I said, we played at Sims Valley this past year, and Garen Stiltner, without question, one of the better players in the area and our best player on our team, struggled from the free throw line. I think he was like 3-9, and that's not custom to him. He rode back with his mom from the game, and by the time we got back on the bus, he was already in the gym shooting free throws. And he got in that next morning, and he got to school early shooting free throws again. And you don't see a whole lot of kids like that anymore. And that's why he is what he is. He, you know, when he's not shooting the ball well, he stays late after practice. He comes in early practice. And that's what you need from your kids.
Okay. Quick question before we start, you know, ripping on you and making, you know, making light of the situation. Advice for parents. You've seen a lot of kids over the years. Take off the blinders.
Take them off.
Meaning your kid's not quite as good as you think.
No, that's the problem you're running into right now. It's crazy. You know what? It's not from my basketball point, but being an athletic director, and you sit in the press box or you sit in the stands and listen to some of the parents. My kid's going to Ohio State. My kid's going to Michigan State. See some reality. And it's tough. It's tough anymore. You know, every boy and girl is going to be the next, you know, superstar. And they just don't understand. You know, there's going to be something for their kids after basketball, and it's not going to be on the college level.
Well, and I think basketball is a, in the macro and the life cycle thing, basketball's just the tool. The direction of the sport they play and the life lessons they learn and the work ethic and the getting things right and detail driven and things like that. Because like you said, at the end of the day, none of the kids around here are going to make a living doing it, let alone get a college scholarship. So just enjoy it, work hard at it, and that'll make you a better human being when you get into the real world of being a, you know, whatever walk of life that kid does. But yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of good parents out there, but I think it's true that a lot of times parents get really overly caught up in their child.
Well, the one thing I learned a long time ago from George Raveling, he said parents love their children too much, or they don't love them enough. And that's basically it. You know, they don't love them enough, they let the kids get into trouble. Whether it's a drug scene or the alcohol scene or gangs or whatever, and the ones that love them too much just think that they're going to be the next star, and they don't see that, you know. And I think you got to have a medium in there somewhere along line as a parent. It's tough being a parent, and you know, it's not easy anymore because of all the things that are involved in our society and things like that. You know, I had a son and I had a daughter, and they both played athletics, and I just told them, you know, if you're not going to do 100%, don't play. It's not going to bother me any, and I never pushed them to a certain extent, and you know, they've come out to be absolutely perfect kids today. You know, they're both got teaching degrees. They're making pretty good money, and they're great parents. And that's all you really care about.
Along that same line, so that our listeners will know you're not just blowing smoke. Your son, Jimmy Dan, I guess when he was in high school, and tell me, I think you told me, someone's told me this. Maybe it was you or someone else, and correct me if this is not the truth. I guess at the time that he was in high school and he went to Oak Hill High School, at the time that was going on, that was one of the many, you had a really good, big, good group of kids at Chesapeake on your basketball team. And what did Jimmy Dan say to you regarding perhaps wanting to play for his dad.
Well, you know, when he was younger, he was the ball boy at Chesapeake. And then he, somebody, I can remember somebody says, well, Jimmy, he said, when are you going to go to Chesapeake? We had numerous opportunities where they were going to hire my wife as a teacher three different times. In fact, they went to the board and they got her hired. And then all of a sudden, you know, the kids, Haley didn't want to go because she wanted to stay with her friends. And then Jimmy Dan said, he said, I'm not playing for my dad. He said, he's crazy. That was the end of the story.
Okay. Well, any questions you got left, Coach?
No, I don't think so, man. I've enjoyed this. I tell you, every time I listen to these guys, I learn something. So I just enjoy being around these guys that have done this for so long.
This has been a difficult interview for me to do. One, but back in the day when we did radio, me and JJ first did the radio thing, I had no idea who Norm. I'd heard the name obviously back when I was in high school. Didn't know him, and it was comical because him and JJ being very close, and JJ's now a volunteer assistant on his staff. But every question that we would ask, he would always respond, well, JJ. And finally, one day, I got fed up with it. And I'm like, this Pearson guy is an ass. And JJ's like, you just got to get to know him. So I did get to know him, and I was right. But do you remember there was one Saturday, I actually, just to buzz JJ, I said, listen, because I had called you while we were in a commercial break. I said, listen, every question, whether I ask it or JJ asks, I want you to say, well, Carl.
Yes.
But no, I mean, but since that time, I've kind of gotten to know you socially and on these golf trips, and it's hard. I kind of have to throttle down a little bit and be professional. But I know your golf career is very near and dear. It's right up there with basketball. and you know, Coach Osborne, we all had a nice discussion in here about you and your golfing and how you really take to that. You're giving me a really odd facial expression.
You guys take that game way too serious, man. Way too serious.
Well, you're a little competitive.
Yeah, a little competitive, but golf definitely not for me. Not.
No.
And it gets hard to play it when you only play it about three or four times a year. And that's basically when we go on a golf trip, that's about it. And me and Matt have played in a couple scrambles together, and that's basically all I play.
Well, I will say this.
That's my fault. You know, I tell my players, I bring this up a lot. I said, you know what? I said, I'm not very good at golf. And I said, it's my fault. I says, because I don't work at the parts of the game, chipping and putting, you know, and going to the driver range. I don't work on it. I says, you guys same way. You don't work on your jump shot. You don't work on your free throws. It's the same way as in golf. You know, it's like this. Everybody wants to be a lawyer, but nobody wants to go to law school. So, you know, they want the pay. They want the money. So, you know, if you're going to be good at something, you got to put some time in.
Well, I appreciate you coming up here. You know, maybe I'll get you a Christmas ham next year. Or a turkey.
Well, that ham that you know brought in, I mean, there was a half of it there. JJ, I think he's probably got the other half. He needs to do something because the way he keeps statistics, he must be cutting a different ham. He is not right. I mean, you know, he's got certain guys as a leading rebounder on our team. They don't even play.
Yeah. You hired him, not me.
Well, it was a volunteer.
Very competent.
Gets paid what he's worth, by golly.
Exactly.
Well, I know you've gone always had the backs of your assistant coaches.
Oh, well, always. If you've seen them. You've seen him perform, haven't you?
Well, I will say Heath McInnes. Now, it's a catch. That young man, he's got some credentials. I like him.
Well, yeah, he's good if he ever shows up. I asked him today, I says, what do you got tomorrow? I mean, old Ang Syne coming out early and you can't be at practice. He said, I think I got to start our New Year's Eve tomorrow a little early. A piece of work. All right, here's what I got. He's a rookie coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He left the medical kit at Sims Valley. That was his job.
He left the medical.
He left it there. He took our brand new whiteboard and used a permanent marker on it.
Oh, jeez.
So now we can't get it off.
Okay.
He come in wearing Jackson shoes, ooh, red and white, instead of black. I don't understand what we're going to do with the guy. He's a good person. He's a great guy to have added to our staff, though.
Okay, well, while we're doing an intro to the Oak Hill staff, Jim Sloan, the legend himself. Any comments on him?
Yeah, he can quit too. He wants to.
Michael Hale.
He can quit too.
Jeez.
Seriously, guys.
I know.
You know we're just joking.
Oh, yeah.
My staff, I wouldn't trade it for anybody. We got great relationship with our staff.
Yeah.
Good guys.
It's like we were talking actually earlier in another segment about Matt and his staff and how close they are and how they can scream and yell and disagree and, you know, life goes on. And I guess when your assistants are your friends, first and foremost, probably makes your job as a head coach, in all reality, a little funner.
Well, it does, and I'm guarantee you they would love to write a book on it. they'd make some money off that.
I honestly, if and when you ever decide to retire, and knowing that you know basketball's been your life, I know outside of basketball you enjoy reading and basketball. I mean, I don't know a lot of hobbies that you have, you know, but I think there would be a book deal, and it wouldn't be all about basketball technique. I mean, just all of the little stories, and I won't even give, this is a family show, but the stories that you could tell of little things that have happened over your career, I'm sure it would be great. But seriously, Norm, thanks for coming up. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Congratulations, and yeah, good job. When you win 651 games and you don't lose that many, that is good.
Magic Johnson would say that's better.
Well,
than
and the one thing, the one thing about it is that at least I keep track of my wins the right way, not like my buddy from Pickerington North, who already said he had 400 wins and it's only 396.
So he retired at 396?
Yeah, he is not keeping track of his wins.
Did you coach girls at one time?
1 year.
That would have been fun.
At Northwest, 1 year.
And I understand, were you a cheerleading advisor once?
Yeah, I should be. No, my wife took care of that. She okay. was cheerleading advisor.
Seriously, thanks for stopping up by. I appreciate all your thoughts and going through a career that has been nothing short of spectacular, and wish you all the best.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, Coach.
Coach Norm Pearson. Back on the Viking Rumball podcast, presented by McDonald's. McDonald's and MacArthur. Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. Before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports, they go hand in hand. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Well, that was a fun little chat with the coach.
Always is.
Never a dull moment with that man. Well, better get our feet back on the ground and get back to talking about Viking basketball, as you got two road games, one TVC game, and then, of course, a non-league game. But let's touch on the game coming up this Friday night, January the 3rd, as you make a long road trip down to Pomeroy to the friendly confines of Meigs High School and take on Coach David Kites, Meigs Marauders. You know, right now as we tape, I think Meigs is they have a 4-3 record overall, 2-0 in the TVC Ohio. I think they have wins against, let's see, I know they beat Alex and Wellston,
yes.
I think so far, but
yes.
Obviously Caleb Sheets, kind of the shining star for the Meigs Marauders, and David Kite really took that program quite the distance last year, as they go to what they lose in the district finals or district semis?
Must have been district semis.
Yeah, they got beat by Oak Hill last year.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they've really done a great job down there with the Marauders, and I'm sure you've probably already had a chance to either see film or scout them in person. What can we expect from the Marauders Friday?
Well, I think their staple really is they play really hard, and they play a good, solid man-to-man defense, a lot of effort, a lot of intensity. I think some of the teams, you know, if you don't handle the basketball well or you show a little bit of hesitation, they'll really pounce on you. I mean, they're a pretty aggressive team. They're athletic team. That's the one thing about them. They do have athletes. You know, the Sheets kid's a really good player. And then they have a couple other kids that are solid players. But I think really the strength of their team is just their athletic ability. You know, they get after you and they get out in passing lanes. And defensively, they put a lot of ball pressure on you and stuff like that.
By and large, not just with the pressure, but do they like to play an up-tempo, fast-paced, run-and-gun type of thing? Or they like keeping the half court?
Well, they'll push it a little bit. But, you know, I think their defense, when they score a lot of times their defense leads to their offense, I think. And the games where they've struggled to score, it seems like they haven't been able to create some of those opportunities with their defense. So we're hoping that we can handle the basketball and make sure that we don't allow them to, like I say, use their defense to create offense. And hopefully if we do that, you know, we can that'll help our defense as well, obviously, because then we can guard them in the half court instead of them out in open space. So, you know, like I said, though, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, whenever you go down there, it's not an easy place to play. I'm sure their crowd will be into it. And like I said, or like you said, rather, they've been playing well, you know, two wins already in the league. And it's going to be a real challenge for us. But I'd like to think that we're playing better and hopefully we'll play with more confidence. And yeah, I know we're going to have a good week of practice and a hard week of practice, believe me, and here over the break. And hopefully we'll be ready to go Friday night.
When, as you say, we're going to have a good week in practice and a hard week, is there because the kids are out of school, do you make practices a little longer when they're on break, knowing that, you know, that's they kind of have more time on their hands? But
right.
Do you introduce more stuff and kind of make the Christmas break, as far as your practices goes, are they longer? Are they more intense? Do you try to start, you know, throwing in more sets, more plays, mm-hmm. more technique? Is that something you traditionally do?
Well, we felt like we pretty much had everything in. So we're just fine-tuning that. But in terms of the intensity and the length of practice, yeah, some over break you do that. You know, today and tomorrow we will for sure, because we'll want to go a little bit lighter the day before a game, mm-hmm. you know. But these next couple are today, and we've already practiced, and it was a good two-hour, hard, intense, full-court practice. And tomorrow's going to be the same. And then we'll see how we handle New Year's Day in terms of length and all that, and obviously the day before a game. But we're getting ready to get into a stretch, well, we mentioned it before, where we're going to play Friday, Saturday, and then Tuesday, Friday, Saturday.
Right.
So you're looking at, what, five games in, I guess, 8 days, you may as well say, or yeah. a little over a week. So you've got to start to be careful with legs and stuff. You can't just necessarily go 2 hours every night and just kill them. But I feel like early in the week especially, we're going to have some time to recover before we go Friday. So we're definitely going to push them pretty hard right now.
Yeah, so far this season, I don't think you've had many weeks. I don't think you've had any, really, where you've had the Tuesday, Friday, Saturday type weeks. And those are
right.
coming up. But you do know, and it just puts a smile on my face, that with at Meg's, and then we'll get into the at – well, against Piketon at Chile
right.
at OUC. And then there's like six. Am I reading the schedule right? There's like six consecutive home games.
Yes. Well, you know what happened this year, if you look at it, and I was getting ready to say that, we've played six games. We really expected to have eight games in by now. And,
right.
and the two games that we canceled were home games, so that's kind of lopsided the schedule a little bit too, because we had the weather situation when we played Alexander.
Right.
And then the Trimble football deal. So, yeah, I mean, really, we should have eight games in right now and a couple more home games under our belt, but that's just the way the schedule works out. So, like you say, the good thing is we are going to play a lot of home games down this stretch. But, you know, some of those are against really good teams, too. But you'd rather be at home, obviously. So hopefully we can get into a little bit of a comfort zone and a rhythm.
Well, quickly, before we get out of here for the week, coming up this Saturday night, January the 4th, as I mentioned, at OUC at the Shoemaker Center. The fifth or sixth year you've had the annual throwdown with the Piketon Red Streaks?
You know, I'm thinking I'd have to ask Jake, because I think Jake was on one of the first teams that we did that with. I think we started playing them maybe like in 2009, maybe something like that. I'm pretty sure the first time we ever played them, Jake missed it due to mono. He had mono, and yeah. and that might have been the year that Piketon even went to the state tournament, and they killed us pretty bad that first year we played them. But yeah, so maybe 2009, so what would that be? The sixth year.
Yeah.
Right, so... but yeah, I mean, Piketon's a team that's a little bit different than what they've been in the past. They did graduate a lot too. They got a new coach.
Yeah, who is their coach now?
Coach Brabson, Bud Brabson.
Yes, he's a local guy.
Yeah, I mean, Piketon. His son. He had a really good player that played for them last year, mm-hmm. guard for them, and graduated. And they're a team that. Like you talked about their record, they've played a really tough schedule, though.
Yes.
I mean, they've lost to Lucasville Valley. They lost to Bloom Carroll. They lost to Uniota. They lost to Southeastern. So, I mean, you know, they've played some really good teams already. They lost the other night to Waverly, I know.
That was close.
Yeah, close game
holiday.
At Waverly in the holiday
right.
thing. So they're a little bit better in their record shows, and they've got some size. And so this is a really challenging weekend. I mean, when you look at it – like I said, going to Meg's is going to be difficult. We're going to have to really, really play well to win that game, and then obviously turn right around and play these guys at OUC, Piketon. So this is going to be a tough weekend for us. First real, I guess, Friday Saturday situation, and both on the road. So yeah, it's going to be a tough. We're going to have to play well.
Well, we wish you all the best of luck as you hit the road this weekend down at Pomeroy against the Marauders, and then Saturday night down to a quick question. I know Friday night at Meg's, that will be a tripleheader, correct?
Yeah, and I knew you were going to ask me this. As far as I know, still on Saturday.
That's triple.
We are planning on, well, I think last I've checked with Jason Taylor, their AD, and I'm going to check with him again, we weren't going to be able to play the freshman game due to OUC having a game that afternoon.
Oh.
Now, if we think that OUC game can get over quick enough, we may try to slide it in. I need to touch base with him again. But last official word was 6 o'clock JV start for Saturday night.
Okay. So
and I'll tell people this. Check Facebook. If we, you know, because we were going to make it a last-minute thing, honestly. If we thought we could get the freshman game in, we'll go ahead and schedule it last minute. But as of right now, that's not the case. If we're going to play a freshman game, we'll make sure we get that out on Facebook and try to get the word out to people.
Yeah, if you're not a fan of our page, it's Vinton County Vikings Basketball on Facebook. And
right. It
usually has articles on every game, as well as we actually thumbnail the podcast there and get pictures and all that kind of thing. But the unofficial executive director of basketball operations, William Terry Wayne, Pub Dog Llama Hale, he will always keep you abreast and up to date in time, unlike some people who, I don't know, 5-6 days before a game, he doesn't know who's playing or when. But you know, we got Pop.
All I am is a coach of the AD. How am I supposed to know all these things?
Yeah, I mean, if I didn't know better, I'd think you would be the person that would know.
Yeah, yeah.
Shows you what I know. Coach, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you again next week, okay?
All right, man, thanks.
The Viking Rumble Podcast presented by McDonald's and MacArthur, Jackson, Oak Hill, and Wellston. Whether it's before or after the game, McDonald's and high school sports, they go hand in hand. McDonald's, I'm loving it. For Coach Combs, Carl Noxan, thanks so much for checking in with us, and we'll talk to you again next week for episode 31 of the Viking Rumble Podcast.
You've been listening to the McDonald's Viking Roundball Podcast, presented by McDonald's of Jackson, Wellston, Oak Hill, and now proudly in MacArthur. McDonald's and Viking basketball. I'm loving it. Join us next week for an inside look at Vikings hoops with the head coach of the Vikings, Matt Combs, and your host, Carl Knox, right here on the McDonald's Viking Roundball Podcast.